Wow, we're live. Not sure who's on here, but we're live tonight. Lost Highway.
This was intermission, didn't ya? Well, if you gotta go pee or get a beverage, I suggest you go do it quickly. And we do take donations. Look at me now. I'm skin and bones, I tell ya.
I'm the man, I got the plan. When it hits the fan, do all I can, do all I can.
J-Shrek Lost Highway. There is Tom R. Wilson James, who's always on there first. Mike Weller, you're going to notice a couple things immediately. Hopefully you notice a couple things. I got a new mic. I've got a new board. I have earphones, and I don't know how long I'll be able to last with earphones. It feels like I'm talking in a cave, but the good news should be hopefully the microphone sounds better than it has. I heard the microphone. I was very upset that it wasn't better than it was. And so what I did was, I did what anybody would do. I said, "What microphone does Joe Rogan have?" And I said, "That's the one I want." So that's the one I bought. Now, it won't make me smarter and it won't make me as good as Joe Rogan, but damn, it's a start. So we've changed basically everything. We've got everything on this board you could ever dream of. So I can lay a few little bit of alien music underneath, which is kind of cool because, you know, one thing that I want to talk about to get started tonight, everybody knows what our whole deal is going to be. Our whole deal is going to be about sacrifice. But did anybody see in the news that, oh man, aliens, you know, every time I think that maybe they're not real or maybe it's not the way it should be, guess what happens? Did you see the American Airlines flight that came over New Mexico out of Ohio going to Phoenix? And when they were in the air, what did they say? At 37,000 feet, there's another vehicle outside. And they thought it was a missile. So just when we think that possibly, you know, oh yeah, all of a sudden, and then Kim always gets what the LA woman, she always gets that. Showtime 787. I'll tell you what, maybe that's what's been going on. Showtime 787 is that, man, it's been crazy today. I don't know what you guys have been doing, but I'll tell you what, it has absolutely been maddening. People have been out of their minds today. And I wanted to show you something real, real quick. You know, when we talk about aliens, it's going to be in a situation pretty quick that we're going to know. I mean, we're going to know. There's just no doubt in my mind. I mean, we keep easing up to the line. And you think about the thing that Trump did right before he went out of office. He had the COVID relief program, but you know what that said? That said that whatever the FBI knew that they were going to have to release in 180 days. Well, that's happened in January, so that's coming. And you know, you think about the Star Wars program, you think about all this stuff that a lot of people thought was really crazy, right? And all of a sudden, it's not so damn crazy. I tell you what, it's closer than we think. I really believe that. Real quick, I want to put this up because last week I appreciate all the people Eric C, Joe B, and Clink for allowing us to be another time we're going to be commercial free, which is awesome. You know, if you're wondering about the headphones, one thing I, you know, if you haven't seen or you've seen people with headphones, the whole reason behind that is these microphones, when you get away from them, they sound worse. So I don't think I'm going to be able to last the full time, but at least now I believe that the audio you guys are hearing, because what we're going to start doing with this new board and this new mic and all the equipment that we have purchased is do a lot more podcasts. I'm going to do a whole series on Agua Fria. We're going to start and we're going to do an entire series just on Agua Fria, because some of the things that we're going to talk about tonight, when we get into it a little later in the show, now we're going to have archaeologist Jeff come on and explain to us why no one says anything about the subject we're talking about tonight. Nobody says anything. But before we get into that, let's pop up here, because there's just so much weird stuff going on in this day and age. And let's get in here and see what this says right here. You know, that just happened. No, that just happened. So that was the recording from the actual flight, and that just happened. I've said that 1,000 times, but this is not old news. Man, there's so much stuff going on, you know, and we should know something in 180 days. We should absolutely know something in 180 days about this alien type stuff that's going on. And it's just unbelievable. You want to think that there's some, you know, a lot of stuff that we get into on this show, sometimes you're, it's out there, but now it's all coming to us. And man, I'm telling you what, it's unbelievable. So let's get into this a little bit, what we're going to talk about. Let's get in here and make sure I haven't lost anything. Why are you trying to be quiet? See, I don't know if I'm trying to be quiet or not. With these headphones on, maybe it's super loud. And if it is, I'll back it back up. And I can also adjust that on this new board that I've got. So I appreciate all of you for helping me purchase this. So let's talk a little bit about sacrificial. You know, we think about that kind of stuff, and you think that can't be real. I mean, you think about that kind of history, because that's really, you know, it's our history just as well as it ever is anybody else's, right? This is the history of the Americas. So when you think about sacrifices, things like that, it seems so far away, and it seems like, you know, that really wasn't a part of what went on. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull these off real quick, because, man, I don't think I'm the guy that's cut out to do that. Bam, my ears need to breathe. So when you think about that, though, yeah, you know, that's something way a long time ago. It doesn't have anything to do with today. How can it affect anything that's going on today? How could it be a part of anything that we have going on? And, you know, but why don't we know that history? Why is it a secret that that there were human sacrifices all over the Americas? Now, first off, when we think about human sacrifices, the first thing you think about is, well, you know, it happened way down in Mexico, right? It happened way down in southern Mexico or South America, but it really wasn't anything to do with North America, maybe a little bit of upper Mexico, but not really. It didn't pertain, or anything like that wasn't really going on. But the truth of the matter is, the more you dig into this stuff, the more that you realize that this was going on, and it was so common that it was unbelievable. And so if you think about, we're going to start with the Aztecs is where we're going to start this discussion. And that's where we're going to kind of head to. And then we're going to move up north, but it may be a lot of truth to that. Primitive Lifeways is on too, so that's good. He's even got music to come in when we do bring him in, but we're going to get more in depth into this, and I'm going to bring Jeff in about 20 minutes, and we're going to talk about why is it a secret? Is it what Kim says? Kim says we can't handle the truth, so they think so. And you know, maybe that's right. Maybe we can't handle the truth. Maybe the truth is bigger than we want it to be. You know, because when you think about when you went to school and you learned history, right? You went back to, you know, the Euro-Americans coming in. You went back to the, you know, some natives, but not a lot. And it was more about the westward expansion and things like that. You know, they might have got into East Coast history, right? With the revolution and things like that, but they never really stepped backwards into a whole nother world and a whole nother culture that is really unbelievable. The more that you slip into this and the more research that you do, the more that it is absolutely incredible, the amount of, when you think about sacrifices also, do you think about Tempe, Arizona? Do you think about Tempe? Do you think about that that's where that took place, right? You know, they might have sacrificed the football team a few times, and probably they needed to. But as far as just the reality of it is, can you imagine that there was a time that this culture within the grounds that most of us live on, and it doesn't matter where you live in the Southwest, this was pretty prevalent everywhere, but it doesn't get talked about. It's one of these things that is way below what we think or what they believe that we need to know. And it's really incredible. As Tom wrote, Aztec every year sacrificed many people, even children, as gifts to gods. Yeah. Here's another thing that is incredible. So let's just start. We are going to start this journey with the Aztecs, right? And the reason I want to start with the Aztecs is that these people were as advanced as the Roman Empire. These weren't a couple people running around in loincloths that didn't know what was going on. They had aqueduct systems. They were building palaces. They were building pyramids. They were engineering things that were unbelievable. And where in the hell did that come from? How did they advance themselves so deep and fast within 100 years that they took over? But there was another side that they had this insatiable appetite for human flesh that kind of tore at what they were going to build and then what happened to them. You know, a lot of times people want to think that a handful of Spanish beat these millions of people. But the truth of the matter really is that the Aztecs were so hated that all these surrounding tribes banded together with the Spanish because they were killing all of them for sacrificial rights. It wasn't because they would start wars because they wanted to find more people to sacrifice to the gods. Now, where the hell did that even come from? So as you do your research in sacrifices, it's not just on this, it's universal. People did this all over the world. So this wasn't some weird like thing that happened in one, you know, small portion or small part of the world. You know, the first thing to think about is absolutely first off, how they get so advanced. How did in 100 years, they did things in the first 100 years that civilizations never accomplished. The second thing I always think about is one of the most highly evolved societies in the world is now in a country that's considered to be basically third world. You know, that empire was basically Mexico City, which is also, if you do the research, is built on a lake, which is a complete engineering feat as in itself. These people had pools that they would study the stars by looking down and studying the stars. They knew all the systems. They had calendars, and they had sacrifices. And they weren't sacrificing one or two people. They were sacrificing thousands of people. You know, there are stories after stories after stories. And a lot of people know that. A lot of people go, well, that was the Aztecs. That was way down south, right? That was another group of people. That was another time. And it had really nothing to do with us. You know, and the reality of it is, my theory is that it had everything to do with us. And that we were just a offshoot of that group of people. Now, if we get into this, it's incredible to think. And again, I had always thought, yeah, the Aztecs, yeah, they sacrificed people. When I think of a sacrifice, you know, I might be the only one, but I'm like, well, Sunday, you know, well, on Sunday, we take a guy and we kill her, right? This was going on from start to finish of the day, all day long. I mean, it was unbelievable. In their temples, they would cover the entire inside of the temple with human blood. As a, not only the sacrifice. Now, the other thing to think about in this culture is this. The obsidian knives that they used were razor sharp. They still use them. They still use obsidian, I believe, in eye surgery sometimes. So it's still, the material is ridiculous for doing what they made it to do or built it to do. But they would tear the heart out, beating in their hand, and offer it to the gods. I mean, the violence and the brutality, and that you would have to be just, I mean, and this went on and on and on. This was not just a small, you know, it happened over here on occasion, or it happened over there. It was absolutely all the time. It was full bore, and it would have to completely change your thinking, the way you lived, the way you thought. I tell you, the more I got into this stuff, the more I realized that, my gosh, it not only affected them and their culture, it affects us today. I truly believe that it affects us today. Now, we'll get into that a little later of why I believe that. But I believe that even today. Now, here's the thing about that. Where did it come from? And then as we carry in, and I'm not going to say that everybody, we've done some things on some people that have been Satan worshipers, things like that. I mean, this is, all those things are an evolution of our history. They're all an evolution of where we came from. And so to say that it hasn't creeped into our world today, I don't think is accurate. I believe it has. Now, one of the things they also said was, one of the things in the Aztec kingdom was the fact that they were highly divided. And when you're highly divided, then there's no middle. And when there's no middle and you can't find middle ground, then you're either with us or you're against us. Now, that's a dangerous thing that's in our society today, is that when we have these attitudes, you're either over here or you're over there and you can't even see to the middle, then you're either with us or you're against us. You're in this culture that, you know, if you're not one of us, then you must be against us. And that is a dangerous place to be, because that's where they were. They were in this dangerous place of either you're with us or you're against us. And I tell you what, we can't fall into that same trap, Because you know what? If we don't, if we're not able to see a different side, it doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but you got it. We all got to come to the center in this whole deal if we want to survive, because if we don't, we're going to be on those edges. Now, the end result might be that you don't come over and barbecue us, but the reality of it is if there's not an out or any flexibility, then guess what? We're going to make the same mistakes that these cultures made before. Now, the thing to think about, and the one thing I want to talk to Jeff about is, first off, why do they not say anything about this? Why is this so secret in the world of archaeology, this cannibalism, this sacrifice? Why is that so taboo? And so when he comes on here, the one of the things that we're going to talk about is, you know, why have we turned our back? Why is this not important? Why do we think, you know, it might be what Kim said. Do they, you know, but there definitely seems to be these weird, rigid rules within archaeologists that they kind of keep this little world to themselves. And, you know, maybe they do it for good reasons that I'm not aware of. That'll be another great question that when Jeff gets on here, we can ask him. But, you know, there's also thought processes that, you know, we're only as smart in archaeology as the information that we have and the technology that we have. And as the technology gets better, we're going to be able to recreate how these people lived. I truly believe that. We can do that now. There's tribes in the world right now that are still following these sacrifices. They're still doing and living exactly the same way as they did on Agua Fria or they did in the Aztec kingdom. It's still there. And how could this highly advanced technology, this highly advanced civilization, how in the hell could they have existed and where in the hell they come from? So how'd they all of a sudden in 100 years evolve into this city? Now, I'm going to get into a little bit of some of the stuff that I've dug up just so we can stay up with this. And we're going to get in here and take a look at some of the stuff that that we have seen. And I'll stop screen. There we go. Let's go back to share video file. Let's get into here. Why is that not working tonight? Share screen. Here we go. Chrome tab. First thing I want to talk about real quick, let's get into there, just so you know this name, because all these cities and people in the Aztec world is, they're bizarre and to try to even say it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to cheat a little bit. This is how you pronounce this.
Tenochtitlan. Tenochtitlan. Tenochtitlan.
So that is part of it. So what we're going to do is we're going to get back out of here and then we're going to show a little more, but all those are so difficult to do. So let's go into.
It is a story wrapped in myth and legend. How did a tribe of wandering nomads engineer the America's greatest empire in just 200 years?
They had to devise engineering systems which were extraordinary for their age.
Their civilization rivaled Rome in its sophistication.
The Aztecs had the best technology that could be produced in the conditions of which they lived.
Aqueducts, palaces, pyramids, and temples stood as a tribute to their gods and a testament to the power of humankind. The Aztecs' crowning achievement was a gleaming capital city that astonished European explorers called the Venice of the New World.
The the city spread out, glittering against its canals and its lake, bedecked with fine trees and beautiful mansions.
Their thirst for power and blood set them on a course for destruction. When it finally came, their annihilation would be swifter and more complete than the world had ever known.
You know, I tell you what, when you think of that, you think of these people that you think are just barely getting by, right? And the reality of it is they're living unbelievable. And so the Spanish came there thinking, oh my God, they couldn't believe they built that city on a lake. That is unheard of. I mean, that whole deal is just ridiculous. It's unbelievable. And so when you get into that, the first thing you think about is how could that happen? And so we're going to start with the Aztecs, but that's not where we're going to end up. Because one thing that you need to know is that we think of, well, it was ancient times. This was 600, 1,000 years ago, right? But the reality of it is this. They were trading back and forth. They had trade routes. They were interacting. They were doing business with people in New Mexico, in Arizona. So these cultures were coming this direction. It just didn't stop there. It came forward, and all of a sudden, you know what? We are finding human sacrifices all over Arizona just as well as they did there. It may not have been prevalent, but they found areas in Tempe, they believed when they dug them, where people that were being sacrificed in Tempe, Arizona. I mean, so this is not something that's so far away. This is things that are right in our own backyard. And my God, it's unbelievable. So I tell you what I'm going to do. Let's get Jeff in here and let's see if Jeff can maybe shed some light on why we have no idea that this happened. And so here is Jeff. What's up, Jeff? How are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. How about yourself?
You know, I'm doing excellent. We can even do a little applause button now. I think we've got applause. We've got all kinds of different stuff eventually. It's coming, man. We're going to be there eventually. how have you been, man? You've been good?
Yeah, I've been good. I know it's a little dark in here. I'm still working on my lighting situation for some of these shows. So you guys will have to forgive me, but yeah, I've been good, man. Just, you know, working and, today had a pretty good day, pretty eventful. And how about yourself?
Hey, you know, I've just been trying to get this program going and I spent all my time involved in trying to make this thing work and we're going to get there. I'm ready. I'm excited to talk about tonight. This is a subject that fascinates me. I have been looking for the sacrificial, petroglyph that's at Squaw now four times and I've not found it. I don't know where it's at, but there is a petroglyph that is representative, they believe, of sacrifices at, you know, Agua Fria. So, I mean, this is not something that's so far away. This is a place that, you know, we've all been, but, let's just jump. Wait a minute. There was Ernest. They were the only civilization that eliminated hunger. Unfortunately, ate the hearts of their Ernest.
Well, hey, real quick, before we get into that, I'll say that new microphone sounds really good.
Well,
that's a good sounding mic.
I hope it does. I hope it sounds good because, and again, we're going to. We're going to step this game up and we're going to make it fun and we're going to get some stuff going. So why is it a secret?
Well, I don't know. I guess I can say some of it is a secret amongst certain people, probably politically motivated reasons. And then a lot of it you can still find. Last week, I sent you quite a few links about not only human sacrifice in Mesoamerica, which is ancient Mexico, but also violence and cases of violence around the American Southwest in Pueblo and groups. I don't know of cases of violence per se in Hohokam and I really can't. I'm trying to think of any cases of violence in Hohokam or Salado, but mostly you find it pretty prominent in the Puebloan world, up in Flagstaff, throughout the Four Corners, Colorado, Mesa Verde during the Great Drought. And that's not to say that it did not happen in Hohokam or Salado. I'm sure it did. But there's no, and I'm sure there are reports of it, but a lot of the reports that I have read do not talk about it. So why is it secretive? I don't think it's really secretive. I think that the cat has been out of the bag and it's starting to become more prevalent and more talked about, more widely shared amongst the public, especially with the articles and videos that I sent you. But as archaeologists, a lot of the mainstream archaeologists, they don't really like talking about that because of political reasons. And, you know, they're a lot of, and I don't want to get myself in trouble. That's why I'm kind of stumbling here, but a lot of archaeology, and rightfully so, does want to work closely with the tribes. And if you have a tribe, a modern descendant of a prehistoric people that are trying to say, look, we were a peaceful people, this never happened, and you have an archaeologist that's saying the exact opposite, there's going to be natural tension and conflict within that relationship. So what ends up happening is archaeology tends to ignore it and just kind of set it to the side. And okay, business as usual, we're going to talk about ceramics and how people manufactured them and trade routes, so forth and so on, which is great. That stuff's important too, but it's really important to give the whole picture. And did violence happen in the American Southwest? Absolutely it did. There's several videos that you can look up on YouTube and articles right through ASU. One of the articles I have pulled up right now and I sent you about extreme cases of violence, including mutilation in the Flagstaff region. There's several sites that have really bad cases of violence. And the bottom line is when you have harsh conditions, drought, crop failure, that creates tension. I mean, you can only imagine if food ran out in our country, people would go insane. Violence would skyrocket. I mean, just through this global pandemic, we've seen it.
Well, see, that's kind of what, but see, that's, you're selling me on why I think like I think, though, because that's the reason that we need to know what happened. We need to know what our history was so we can look at our future. We know, for example, that there was a massive drought, right? And that caused great problems within Arizona and the Southwest. It's going to happen again. It's just a matter of time.
We're already in it.
Yeah. So it's no different that, you know, what I look at though is this. I just saw there is a book that I'm reading a couple books, and I'm trying to figure out which one of these tabs I've got it, because I've got so much stuff up here. Let me see if I can pull it across. There is a book, it's more of a paper, that's, and I'll get the name of it, of a gentleman that came through and excavated two sites in Arizona, one by the airport and then Tempe. And he talked about the canals and the unbelievable, the fact that how they built these canals and all of that was just unbelievable. He also stated that he believed there was 90,000 people then in just these two locations. He estimated 90,000 people. So when I think about, you know, I always think of five or six people by a riverbank, right? I never dream in my head when I'm thinking about these civilizations that, you know, with the Aztecs, there were millions, right? There were millions of people. And when I go to Arizona, I think of just a handful, right? Just, oh, there's a small group over here. And that's not what it was. I mean, how they controlled these people and the masses, whether they did it by sacrifice or whether they did it by, you know, fear or however, to me is critical when how they lived their lives and did those things change them, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a power grab. When you look at platform mounds, for example, in Tucson and Phoenix, and I mean, quite honestly, we find not real large platform mounds like we do down south, but they do appear in Prescott culture. But nonetheless, when we find platform mounds, there's something going on to elevate a person of high status and give him a higher podium compared to the others. And we do know, and we do have evidence that there were definitely hierarchy systems throughout Arizona, especially in Hohokam and Salado. Hohokam, you find these platform mounds where powerful individuals, people that are likely born into status, into achieved status, or have worked for that status, never by force, but people who are born or ascribed to that status, they have a tendency to sit on top or reside on top of these high platform mounds with temples on them. And then when we see an influx of immigrants, the Kayenta immigrants, Salado is just a mixture of different cultures putting ideology and religion together. And it's kind of a blend of different cultural traditions. But nonetheless, they were Kayenta migrants. When we see these Kayenta migrants come down, we start to see these platform mounds rise in Hohokam and Salado. So we know that there was probably some kind of tension there of, just like we look at it as today, you know, we get a flux of migrants in from a different country, and our human tendency is to resist in a way because we don't know what that change is about to bring. It was no different then, and that's why we see these platform mounds come up. So, yeah, there was definitely thirst for power. And I mean, even the Oodham, when the Hohokam essentially started dwindling away, and we start to see not a disappearance, but a disappearance, but most likely a migration out of the Phoenix Valley and from Tucson. When we see that, the Hohokam descendants, known as Oodham, have stories about people gaining too much power and eventually the population turns on them. So we do know that there was a thirst for power out here. Now, as far as violence, again, I don't know specific cases of human sacrifice in Hohokam or Salado, but I do know that there was violence. There was definitely violence in the area. I mean, all cultures and civilizations dispute from time to time, and our tendency, even as modern people, is to go to war. So that absolutely happened down there.
Well, you know, there is digs. You know, I'm kind of trying to really look at this in a whole nother light than I ever have, because it's like all of a sudden all these doors are starting to open in my mind. And that's probably a terrible thing to even think about that could happen. But the reality of it is that I'm looking at all this differently. And this is my own theories. It has no, just my thought process has this, that these people intermingled with the Aztecs. There is some intermixture in the culture. Some of that got carried up here. They were communicating, they were trading. They intermingled, they intermarried. When I look at Chaco, I see Aztec. I see Aztec all over Chaco. I see Chaco as being another great city, like Mexico City in a sense, ancient times, right? I see the same thing. And so when I look at it and I see these canals that they had to dig with rocks and carry dirt with baskets that would have taken thousands of people to do it. This is, you know, these were massive stuff. Whether they were building in mounds in Missouri or they were building, it took a mass amount of people to do this work. So were these people doing, was it a fear? You know, was it, how are they being driven? And how are they being controlled? And how was they being managed? You know, you look at Casa Grande, for example. I mean, they had massive canal systems, and there had to be this power put down, and you know, there had to have been generals, and there had right. to be, you know, field soldiers, and I mean, in a sense, to do this work, and there had to be some fear or some group. They could have said, "Hey, we just, you know, we're all for one," right? But that's probably not what happened. You know, that probably was people were told to get in the ditch and dig the ditch. And you know, and was these sacrificial rites a part of the fear, you know, or this cannibalism even, that people were afraid, so they did what they were told to do?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I'll address some of that, or actually all of it. But as far as the Aztecs having influence over the Southwest, the Aztecs were quite a bit later into prehistory, or not even prehistory. I mean, there's documented language, so not pre-colonial contact, through Spanish contact. So Aztecs come a little bit later. A lot of the influence out here, like Chaco, Aztec ruin, in the south, in the American Southwest, New Mexico, along the Four Corners, you get a lot of Pachime influence, and that is from a site called Casas Grande, and that is in Chihuahua, Mexico. So you do get a lot of that influence, and Hohokam, Pueblo, that comes quite a bit earlier, but nonetheless, there was definitely violence. There was definitely a power structure. And when you talk about generals and people who have higher status, you're absolutely right. There are clear signs of higher status within almost every single prehistoric Southwestern group. Higher status is very common amongst Hohokam, Salado, Sanawa, Mogollon. With that higher status does come violence. I mean, people, especially during times of drought, you know, you can imagine as a commoner, again, the mindset was completely different. As a commoner, you're putting in a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of effort into supporting this way of life that you're trying to become accustomed to, and in many cases have become accustomed to, especially later on in prehistoric development. And you put all of your trust and faith into a group of people, a small group of people, or one individual, because you think that person is appointed from a higher power that is bringing rain, bringing abundance, bringing crop production, bringing corn, and all of a sudden that stops. Are you kidding me? You know, that is when people tend to rebel. That's when violence happens. The commoners turn against the big leader, and you have chaos. So, yeah, I mean, was there violence? Definitely. I mean, human sacrifice. Again, there's a Mogollon bull. Mogollon, another prehistoric civilization in the American Southwest, through the eastern parts of Arizona, going into New Mexico. And my gosh, if it's not clear evidence of human sacrifice, I don't know what is. It's a depiction of a man dressed as a horned serpent, which is another Mesoamerican ancient Mexico belief system and ideology, and kind of like a god figure that pours into the American Southwest with a little bit of a different twist on it. But this priest is actually beheading a person, and you see this zigzag line of the blood coming out of the person's head with a knife in the priest's hand. And again, that's prehistoric Southwestern. So definitely human sacrifice occurred. Violence occurred. Mutilation occurred. Witch trials occurred. In Sanawa, we have evidence of witch trials. Look up the House of Tragedy. House of Tragedy is, you know, that should explain things. Look at Dead Man's Edge, where we find a lot of struggle, conflict, poor treatment of the dead, captives, people with their hands behind their back. Same thing with Teotihuacan in Mexico, extreme cases of violence, not only with animals, but with humans as well. Aztec, cases of cannibalism, horrific stuff, bloodletting. Same thing with the Maya world, all throughout Mesoamerica. If you did not give blood, the belief was the earth would not produce. So during hard times in the Maya world, when crop failure became more prominent, more blood was letted. So there was more bloodletting, there was more death, because they thought the more blood you give, the more crop production will occur.
Well, see, you know, that's kind of the point, though, in my thinking, is that that's why that's so critical. It's so important. It's one of the most important things that drove the entire culture and society, was either this religion or this fear or a combination of both. But that's, to me, is what's so important about it. It's not to say, oh, we're glorifying what happened, but you know, cultures are driven by whatever, right? And the same political things that went on then go on today. The division, all the same things. These aren't brand new ideas. You know, these are all old ideas that I think are critical to just how we think today. And that's why, to me, it's so important, because I want to know if they dug the canal down in Phoenix because they believed that it was the right thing to do. It was a cultural thing, or the fact that they were going to get their heads cut off, or a combination of both. I'd like to know that, not that we will be able to know it, but you know what I'm saying? I would like to know what drove the society to flourish. You know, what was the driver with the Aztecs? I mean, what was the magic that made those guys unbelievable? And then, you know, the violence just, you know, inevitably the thing that grew them killed them, right? This lust for power is the same thing that drove them, you know, everybody around them to finally turn on them. And then they had these massive cultures, whether it's in Tempe or Phoenix, or it's in Mexico City, they just disappear. And what replaces them is so far less superior. I mean, all of a sudden, all these technologies, these Chacos, the five-story buildings, they're not built again. You know, that to me is more important than any of this, is why didn't that society rebuild? Why wasn't there a time between 1450 and, let's say, 1800, 1750, whatever number you want to put on it? It didn't rebuild here, it doesn't seem like. It may have been in Mexico, but it didn't build here, and unless just the drought lasted forever, you know? And so that's why I'm always, so interesting to me is that, you know, what drove these people, you know, and again, I always thought it was a handful of them. There's millions of people, right? I mean, how many people do you estimate around, let's say 1400, how many people do you think were in the state of Arizona at 1400? Just out of curiosity, and I'm not going to hold you. I'm just trying to get an idea in my own head.
Well, I think less, you know, around 1400, 1450, we start to see things break up and we start to see people migrate out of areas, more conflict, more warfare, likely more conflict and more warfare. So there was something major that was starting to take place that drove people away from their homelands and into other areas. Some people say disease. Some people say, again, more power, more warfare. It's hard to say what the population was, but we know at the height of prehistoric civilization in the American Southwest, depending on the region, especially Hohokam, there were a lot of people. There were a lot of people, and throughout time, it takes a lot of labor to build those canals and platform mounds and ball courts. And when you have that kind of architecture and that kind of societal evolution and development, you definitely have a power structure. What drove that? I believe it was religion, a religious belief system that was tied into the upper world, the present world, and then the underworld. And we also see that in ancient Mexico and Mesoamerica. We also see ball courts in ancient Mexico and Mesoamerica. And the ball courts were nothing to mess around with. We don't find it really here in Hohokam where people would get sacrificed for losing. But did the ball game get violent? Oh, I'm sure it did. It was a very competitive sport in Hohokam, but in Maya, the losing team off with the head, they would cut their head off and throw them down the stairs, throw their lifeless body down the stairs. So yeah, there was violence, there was sacrifice, there was brutality in Mesoamerica, extreme cases of brutality and bloodletting. Did it spill over here? Oh, absolutely. Chaco Canyon, throughout the Puebloan world, you do see quite a bit of violence. I mean, extreme cases of violence, and yes, even cannibalism. That one video that I sent you to your email, boy, that guy, he went through six scientific steps of proving his case for cannibalism in Chaco and throughout the Puebloan world. And if that's not clear, I don't know what is. When he's running tests finding myoglobin, which is digested human DNA in human feces, I mean, that alone is pretty darn conclusive. And then when he finds pot polish on human skulls and deep gouge marks from butchering, he finds a sharpened human tooth, which is, again, a Mesoamerican trait. Man, I don't know. People who deny that, they really got to look at the evidence, because it's clear it did happen. Was it common? I don't know. I don't know if it was common, if it was, you know, a group of rebels that did this, you know, even a group of migrants, that could be. But did it happen? Definitely.
Tom wants you to talk, you know, the House of Tragedy. He wants to know a little more about that.
Sure. So there's a great PDF, and if anybody goes to my website, primitivelifeways.com, you'll see a pop-up box that says subscribe to this email newsletter. I do send out a bi-monthly free email newsletter talking about archaeology in general, but in this next one, I'm going to attach this report to it. So the House of Tragedy was in, it was in the Puebloan world or Sanawa world. And there was, cases of violence, and, and a mostly articulated female. The bones, you know, and other ligaments were scattered throughout and away from some of the body. Yeah, there was cases of violence inside of it. So, and I'll read you I'm glad he asked about this because I'd like to read a little excerpt about the House of Tragedy. So this comes from I think this was a dissertation, but it's on ASU's website. I have it right from the repository. And again, in this free email newsletter, I will attach it. So check that out. Okay. So anyway, it says House of Tragedy is a small unit pueblo in the frontier zone, was excavated by MNA. Blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to get to the specifics. The name of the site was given by the excavator, Watson Smith, and refers to, scrolling down here, past the pictures, referring to evidence of a savage attack that led to the abandonment of the site. The brutalized remains of a young adult female and a young adult male were found on the floor of the site's kiva. Evidence from the kiva indicates that the site has been previously abandoned and then reoccupied. The floor was overlain by landfill, blah, 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 55 centimeters of the original. This floor surface was resurfaced at least once within a layer of 2 to 5 centimeters of clay. Believe the site has been abandoned, and scrolling down a little bit here, they have a lot of citations and pictures on this. Sorry, guys. Believe the site has been abandoned in a short time, and also interpreted the patterns of post holes and resulting from later braces added to the support sagging superstructure, the abandonment of the floor, hole vessels, monostones, jet iron or bone all, jet mirror. The female victim was laid on her back roughly in the center of the floor, one arm splayed, put over the hearth. The body of the male victim was dismembered and scattered on the floor around the female. So there's a lot more to it. Again, this is over 400 pages long, but pages 298 to 340 really get into the details. But you can see that the House of Tragedy was a horrific scene, and it goes into greater detail, like I said. But it's one of those reports that you read, and you got to kind of take your time reading it, because you get a lot of citations in there, and you got to kind of jump around those and interpret it. But it's a great report. It's a scientific study, and it's not like it's closed off to the public. So it's public information.
Well, you know, one thing, and this is kind of not on the same subject, but to me it is. If anybody is familiar with parts of the Civil War, now there were the border wars between Missouri and Kansas, and there were the bushwhackers and two sides that fought each other. And the reality of it is they had a battle between them, North versus South, and they dismembered everyone on the battlefield at one location. Then the same happened. Then the bushwhackers went across. They had another conflict, and they dismembered every person they killed. They dismembered. They cut off their arms and legs. Now, this was Civil War time that they did this. They did this as an act of disgracing their dead bodies, right? I mean, now this is a bunch of, so violent. I guess my point, the reason I bring that up is that you know, violence is a part of all civilization. It's not, but I think it's important that what we accept in our lives today. You know, that wasn't that long ago when that was accepted. That was an acceptable way. You know, it wasn't that long that they were cutting ears off of the enemy and having them around their neck. Okay. That was you know, Vietnam. And so this things that we think are so unbelievably bad, and I'm not saying they're good, but it does say a lot about the culture, and it does say a lot about just life in itself. But I don't take any of those sides personal, regardless of which side did what, whatever. Right. I mean, I look at it as just being part of the violence of, and I can't judge any man that I haven't walked in the shoes. I can't judge them. I don't know what it was like. Even though that might be kind of off topic, we learn how to act these ways, right? We learn how to deal with our issues or problems or life or drought or whatever it might be. And we carry this culture forward. And that's why I think it's so important that we look at the violence to see how society dealt with and how they did what they needed to do. And you know, so maybe replace it, or maybe we don't, you know, repeat. Well,
exactly. It's a lesson to be learned so we don't repeat the past. You're exactly right. And civil wars are some of the bloodiest wars. They're really awful. But yeah, I agree.
Did Ernest's happen? Do you see Ernest's comment up there? I think he's talking about the
House of Tragedy.
Yeah. Was that?
No, that's a different site. Dead Man's Edge, House of Tragedy. Those are all different sites. Yeah. So it did not happen at Wapatki.
Well, look at Ernest. He's right there.
I'm sorry.
Is that Ernest at the Coliseum? Is that a picture of him at the Coliseum? Talk about a bloody location. My God.
Yeah. Yeah. The, Wapatki is a really cool place to visit, by the way. Anybody that hasn't been there, give them a call, see if you can schedule a tour, visit the museum. They're really good. It's a great place to check out. Same thing with Pueblo Grande and Mesa Grande.
Well, you know,
there are well done.
You know, I was reading about another location at Pado. I was reading at Pado. They have what they believe to be sacrifices there.
You know, I want to see that. I'm really curious because you mentioned that at the beginning of the show about the petroglyph panel. I am really curious. I haven't heard anything, but again, I've studied that area, but not very extensively. That's a really fascinating. That's a fascinating area, though. I have my own beliefs about that, about the arrangement there and who occupied it. That's a little bit different from other scholars, but nonetheless, I would love to see that petroglyph panel. Definitely.
One thing I've noticed, though, when I started to look, and you know, I've been looking at these different archaeologists from the gentleman I talked about, in 1895, I'm trying to see if I have his stuff up there. I don't see it right off, but anyway, The Old New World. That's it. That's the book, The Old New World. That's the one that the gentleman talks about human sacrifice in Tempe to the gods because of earthquakes. They were having earthquake problems, he believes. Now, you know, some of this stuff could be, but he said, but his theory was because of the digs, because of the mortuary digs. You know, he dug these up. It wasn't like he made this up. I mean, he dug this up. He actually has drawings of some of the things that they dug up. And that was in modern day Tempe. And the book is Old New World or the paper that I got that from. It really opened my eyes to a lot of different stuff.
And, yeah, I would like to check that out.
Really, a really incredible. And you know, you don't. Here's my thought. When I look at these guys, whether it be Cosmos, who was doing excavation late 1800s, right? Cosmos Mind Off, or some of these other gentlemen early 1900s. I mean, the amount of work we have really done in any of this, other than maybe some large places, maybe a Chaco or something like that, very minimal. We don't really know a lot because we really haven't dug a lot from what I've seen. I mean, we really haven't even really looked at something as big and open and close as Perry Mesa. I mean,
well, and we haven't, I'll add to that. We haven't even discovered the majority of what's out there. I mean, you can imagine how many pit houses still lay underground, especially in the more rural areas.
I mean, I see all these places that, you know, I am starting to understand a lot more as I dig into this. From an outsider without inside information, I am really starting to understand as I'm looking at some of these books that we really haven't even scratched the surface. That's my opinion, and I might be wrong, that we really haven't even scratched the surface on these areas.
I don't think so either. I think that we have a lot more learning to do for sure. Joe B talks about that petroglyph in Agrafria. I'm actually now legitimately curious about where it's at and what it looks like.
I don't know. Grace Schoonover is my deal.
Is Grace still alive, or is that, I'm not sure who Grace is.
Well, I'm trying to figure out that myself. I'm trying to figure out only because there is a gal that said she saw it, and she actually was the one that basically I got my information. If that's the same one, but I don't know if it is or not. She's the one, and I carry it on my computer. I can't figure out how to pull it up.
I wonder if this person has pictures of it, because if she has pictures of it, I can take a look at the petroglyph and see if it matches anything that I've seen in iconography that matches human sacrifice.
I have a drawing of it.
Oh, you do?
Yes, because I've been searching it. So I found the drawing. Oh, she is deceased. That is her. Dang it. So it's the same gal that saw it, that documented it. So I do have a picture I can send you of that. And we posted it actually online when we were going to Squaw to see if we couldn't find it. I never saw it. But that's what it's supposed to represent, though. And again, it goes back to, so if that represented that, and I know they had that going on there at Squaw, and I know that Pato had stuff going on. So I can only imagine the rest of the places had stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
Because why would they be unique and, you know, the only ones that did it?
Yeah.
And
I agree. If that is indeed an authentic petroglyph, I would like to see it. That would be fascinating. But yeah, there's still a lot more to learn, of course. Also, I wanted to quickly bring something up on my website, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you here, Jeff, but on my website, if folks want to go to the blogs and articles page, there's, I believe it's the second post down, and it says Candace Owens comments on Native sacrifice. This was really, really controversial back in October or November. I think it was back in October. And she said something about, I'd have to look at the video again, but she actually comments about human sacrifice in prehistory and in Aztec times, as well as throughout the Maya. So she does specifically talk about it. And man, there were people that were attacking her saying, she doesn't know what she's talking about. These were peaceful people. And this blog that I wrote dips into not only the overall picture, but very specific cases, fact-checking her. And for anybody that has discredited her saying human sacrifice and cannibalism and violence didn't happen in the prehistoric world, they should really go to that that blog post, because that lays out specific cases. Not only that, it shows actual physical artifacts and documentation from the Mayan, the Aztec, the Cahokia world that points to the sacrificial victims and cases of extreme violence. So yeah, it definitely happened. Why people choose to say, oh, it didn't happen, it didn't happen. I think it's a lot of political correctness. They don't want to offend anybody, especially modern descendants. But at the same time, we can't just ignore it, turn a blind eye and say it didn't exist. We have clear and documented evidence, especially in that video that you showed earlier. I'm sure you saw it, but in the beginning where it talks about the individual that skinned the daughter alive and then performed a ceremony in front of her daughter, in front of her father, with the glistening skin of his daughter. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. And that's what started that whole Aztec war. They started to build their city, and it started from that situation. But I mean, it was just unbelievable. Hey, Wendy's talking about pits at Mesa Verde. Are you familiar with the pits at Mesa Verde?
I'm not sure what she's referring to as pits. There are, I think in Mesa Verde, there were trash mounds. I don't know if she's referring to kivas, because kivas are essentially pits. Also, pit houses are pits. So I'm not sure what she's referring to there.
Okay. But, you know, it goes back to, I mean, I don't look at any of this as being, I just think that history is so important that we know what the history is.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. She might be referring to the pit houses. There was cases in the Puebloan world, more outside of Mesa Verde, where a group of rebels would actually invade pit houses. And, you know, in a Puebloan pit house, you enter in through the roof and you actually go down into the kiva, in some pit houses. But yeah, you do enter in from the roof. And what this group of rebels did is they would take these heavy pieces of stone, and in some cases they took rattlesnakes and threw them inside of these pits with families. And then they would cover the top entrance, remove the ladder. They would pull the ladder, cover the top entrance, and essentially strand them to starve to death inside of their own home. So I don't know if that's what she's referring to, but yeah, that could be essentially they blocked them from entering or exiting, and they would starve to death.
Well, you know, from what we've seen, everywhere in Arizona, there seems to be some type of ritual sacrifice. It may not be to the degree of what we saw in South America or any area in Mexico, but still there's evidence that that was part of society. And was it a control? Was it a completely religious event? Was it really appeasing the gods? And if it was, what's important to me is that when you get to that place where we're going through that drought, that whole society, how it would have changed, you know, all those things that those high shamans or priests would have carried, all of a sudden it wasn't working. And so you would have saw this great grouping of people, you know, start to dissipate and start to move. And you would see these whole cultures and societies disbanding. And that would have been an incredible sight to see, as, you know, kind of like a mining town that was going dry, right? Where all of a sudden, you know, there's less work and there's less people and there's less, and all of a sudden, you know, the neighbors are leaving. And it would have been a weird deal. And then those people that would have been accountable for the rain and the crops, I wonder if they met the same fate that they laid on other people during their reign.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You can imagine with any famine or drought or crop failure, when people get hungry and people starve, chaos ensues. It would be no different from if that happened today in modern society. So, there's whenever there's times of hardship, violence will increase, desperation will increase, and in some cases, desperation to the point of cannibalism did indeed increase. It's interesting. I mean, it's a fascinating subject. It's not really talked about, but the evidence is there. The evidence is pretty clear.
So, you know, I still look at Chaco as being this Rome, and
Chaco was amazing.
And I still see this violence. I mean, how do you control that kind of people with anything other than violence? I just don't see it. I mean, that's my point why this is so important. You know, these death squads that I was told about, whether they be true or not true, that used to roam in Chaco, and, you know, this control, and, you know, those houses that were, you know, evil. I mean, to control a society of that size and that distance, you know, that whole corridor, we see all those roads that are built and all these villages that spread out. And then Chaco being this more what appears to be a ceremonial site, you know, not really a site for, you know, that mass quantities of people lived, more of a place where people went, you know, where the law be laid down. And another thing that amazed me is in Chaco is the gambling. The gambling tools that they found that, you know, they would gamble, you know, and that seemed to be a big influence in their culture as well. So, you know, as their life got better, all these same things that haunt us in our lives, right? All the seven deadly sins was the same thing was going on back then. You know, the only thing that was changed that's changed is technology. That's it.
Yeah. Well, Chaco, at Pueblo Bonito, there was definitely hierarchy, and I just butchered that name. I always do. I don't know why. Hierarchy. So it's been a long day. But anyway, definitely cases of hierarchy and elite status. There's cases where individuals are buried with high amounts of shell and turquoise, and I mean just rich, elaborate goods, wooden carvings of sculptures, just amazing stuff and high amounts of riches. And then we also find a separate set of burials, and that would be amongst the commoners. Well, where were the commoners buried? The commoners were thrown and buried into trash middens. So we see a clear separation of powers within the Chacoan system, and specifically at Pueblo Bonito, there's clear evidence of elite rulership. And yeah, I mean, you can imagine as a commoner and someone who has a completely different mindset than or not mindset, but a different view of the world than we do today. And if you think that someone has control, an individual or group of individuals have control over how much rain is being produced and how crops are being produced, there would be a fear of that, a fear and a respect of that person. There would be a natural respect of that person and a fear that says, wow, I've really have to stay on this person's good side. Otherwise, you know, if he doesn't bring the rain, we don't eat. We don't survive. It's an interesting mindset, to say the least, to try to get into and to think how life was. And that's what keeps me fascinated in archaeology. And I think that's what keeps a lot of people fascinated, a lot of your audience, as well as yourself.
Well, you know, the thing that I think I read also, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, is that they proved that the bloodline of the people they thought ran Chaco was the same bloodline. So it was related. You were born into
status. Yeah.
And so you were born into this, which that's a whole nother world. You know, that's a whole
It was different from It was different from the Aztec Empire or some of the Mesoamerican groups down south where status was forced. And it was often done so with warfare and extreme cases of warfare. And a lot of blood being spilled onto the dirt floor. But that's not the case really in the American Southwest. In the American Southwest, we do have cases of elite status. Again, Chaco is a perfect example. Pueblo Bonito has all the evidence we need. But that was born or achieved status. So it was a different kind of power structure. It wasn't as brutal, but did brutal things happen? Yeah, sure. We've been talking about that all night.
But there's also female presence of power at Chaco. Is that correct?
That's a good question. I want to say that the two richest burials, and I'll have to go back and confirm. It's been a couple of years since I really dug in and studied Chaco, but I want to say the two richest burials were indeed male and female. I do believe that was the case. I'd have to confirm that though. I have all the PDFs and archives on that. But I do believe that it was male and female.
But they had some chambers in Chaco that definitely was not used for fun. And so, I mean, there was definitely some type of, you know, the penalty. And I don't know what for, but, you know, to control. There was definitely a control there of how
there was a control everywhere. Yeah, there was a control not only in Chaco, but in Hohokam. You have to control the population to dig those massive 77,000 acres of irrigation canals. You have to control people and motivate them to build the platform mound, make your pottery, make the shell jewelry, trade with people, build the ball courts, conduct. Yeah, I mean, there's control is very, very common amongst societies. I mean, it's common today. It really is. I mean, it's common in political regimes throughout the world. So that has not changed, and it was like that in prehistory.
So why do you think we're so now that we've talked about this, and we talked about what happened, and we know this is not, you know, there's evidence. I mean, we're not making this up. To what degree, we don't know for sure. No one really does. I mean, you know, because we haven't done the research to be able to answer those questions. It's in the ground, but we haven't done it yet. We haven't dug it. But now there's, why are we so sensitive today? I mean, what has changed where we can't say this happened? We can't say that on the Civil War battlefield, people were mutilated, but they crossed that over. I mean, they washed that out. And again, I don't say it to glorify any of this. I say it because we will repeat this. We will repeat this activity. I believe that. I truly do. I believe that, the answer is in our history and our past. So right. Why is it, you know, we started this whole conversation with Kim saying, you know, we're not able to take it, right? We can't take it. We can't handle the truth. They think so is basically what Kim said. Where's that right there? We can't handle the truth. So they think, why can't we handle the truth? What is it?
I don't know. I think it's personally, I think that political correctness and politics, it enters every single field, whether it's archaeology or history or science or medicine, even in the workplace. I mean, politics is you know, it's so prevalent. And in many cases, people think, well, who am I going to offend? I don't want to offend anybody. So we may as well just take this section out, or let's not really talk about it. Let's ignore this aspect, but focus on this aspect. And in my opinion, you know, it's a great, people might disagree with me and that's okay, but it's a great disservice because you got to tell the whole story, not just one part. And yeah, prehistoric people did amazing things, and it wasn't all violent. I mean, by no means. This is just the topic of tonight's conversation is violence in the prehistoric past. But people did. They did amazing things. There was times of peace and plenty and getting along, and we see that through petroglyphs. We see petroglyphs that are like two U's coming together, that the Hopi talk about it being a symbol of friendship and coming together and crossing paths. So yeah, there's times of good, but there's also times of bad. And later on in prehistory in the American Southwest, we know something major happened. There was a complete shift for people to start building pueblos way, way up high where people can't get to them, where platform mounds and closed complexes became more prevalent. So yeah, there was times of good, but there was also times of bad. We've got to talk about both.
Well, you know, you can't deny the great engineering. I mean, you can't deny, especially if you're going to walk through the Aztecs, you can't deny their abilities.
They built a city on a lake on water. I mean, it's crazy.
And so, but you can't also deny that as much a part of that engineering was how they engineered it, right? How they controlled their populations, how they operated, you know, how they functioned. You know, there's a hell of a good reason why Rome was not a democracy in a sense. It wasn't going to work. You weren't going to last that long. Yeah. And I look at our own world now and I see where does all this crap tie in, right? Well, you know, we talked about this for an hour tonight about, you know, these things that I never believed really could have happened, and these things that maybe they're not big secrets, but it's not something everybody knows. If I ask the average neighbor, hey, do you realize they were sacrificing people in Tempe, Arizona? You know, the Arizona Wildcats fan would be ecstatic over that, but the ASU people wouldn't be nearly as ecstatic. And so when we look at that, and we realize also that ASU is built on burial grounds. So if anybody thinks that you know, oh my God, did I built my haunted my house on a burial ground, you wouldn't believe how many people in the city of Phoenix don't even know it. They don't even know that there's these massive villages in Gilbert, Arizona and Chandler, Arizona that used to be massive villages that they've got housing additions in.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I just look at that and I'm like, my gosh, you know, we can't lose this history because, you know, it's important to me. It really is. And it also equalizes stuff. You know, there's not a group of people in the world that didn't buy into slavery. Everyone did. All of us. All of us were a part of that. Every group had slaves. Every group were violent at one time in their history. Every group made great accomplishments in engineering. I mean, everybody did all this stuff. Yeah. But to say it didn't happen is such crap. I mean, it really does us a disservice as a population to me, and to be a human being.
I agree.
And I don't look at this to glorify it. I look at this to see what we can do to understand what it took. They said that one of the reasons that the Aztec were so good at what they did was because they believed so deeply in what they were doing. Now, it might have been brutal and violent, but they believed so much into what they were doing. Their civilization thrived. And the reason I have to believe that only because they didn't rebuild another one. They didn't rebuild another Mexico City, but until it became Mexico City.
Yeah, they didn't rebuild Chaco. Their empire kept expanding, and that was through force. They're a very forceful people. But you're right. I mean, when we look at past cultures and civilizations, whether they're, you know, documented on codices or prehistoric without documentation, we know that their religious structure was a motivation for them to be alive, essentially. Everything was based on their religion. I mean, right down to the art on their ceramics or the art that's carved into the shell. Religion, spiritual power, spiritual being was the drive and motivation, not only for the Aztecs, but for the Maya, the Teotihuacanos, the Hohokam, the Salado, Sanawa. It was a huge, huge driving factor. And a lot of those Mesoamerican traits, again, they do spill out into the American Southwest. There's still hypothesis out there that's heavily debated today that argues the Hohokam were a migratory people from Mesoamerica. Do I believe that? Yeah, I do. Oh, look at that.
Right on. Awesome.
I love that sound effect, man.
Well, that's on the new system now. So I've got that on the new system now. So I can pop that in at any time. So we'll get it better as we get going. But, you know, I don't know. I just look at this. Thank you, Joe B. I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, you know, I just look at this and I'm like, my gosh, you know, here's the truth. The truth is that this, what we call primitive society, if you want to look at Casa Grande, you want to look downtown Phoenix, you want to talk about all this different stuff, these groups, they did more engineering wise than we did for a zillion years in the city of Phoenix. I mean, they put us to shame by building these irrigation systems and this farming that they had. You know, we basically stole their stuff. You know, when we figured out what they did and figured out how amazing it was, we even couldn't duplicate that for years. And, you know, Phoenix was kind of a deadhead for a lot of years. You know, nobody lived here, you know, until basically air conditioning became a real efficient thing. So I look at that. They put us to shame. Now, that's what you should look at and say, my God, look what these people have done. You know, look what they've done. I mean,
in Phoenix, the canals still run. A lot of the big canals run with the old Hohokam canals. So definitely modeled after the prehistoric people. And you're right. You know, Phoenix. Boy, Phoenix, man, I don't know. The way that city is growing, I can't see how it's going to sustain itself water-wise. But, you know, that's here nor there. With that said, if you think about it, a lot of our modern practices that we do stem from prehistoric and pre-colonial people, definitely. Yeah. Right down to the vessels we eat in, you know, the bowls that we eat in. They did this, they invented that. Their bowls were just made out of fire hardened dirt, clay, the ceramics.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what, it is incredible that if we look at that and look at their accomplishments as well, and we look at them and not judge them, but look at them as a whole, you know, not a group of people that only had cannibalism, only had sacrifices, but they had engineering, they had design, they had style, they had, you know, I mean, even they're smart. Smart. I mean, incredibly smart. And then look at that as a whole and say, you know what? But if we don't allow ourselves to understand what the truth of the matter is and what really happened, I think we're missing the whole boat. And to say that it didn't happen, I don't know. I'm not going to be the one that's going to buy into that. So if the world's going to hate me, I'm okay with that, because I'm not going to back up on any of this stuff in history. I won't back up in any of it, you know, and it's not political either way. I think it's
not history. It's history. There's no political aspect to it. I mean, you know, you could disagree with something. I mean, you could look at something and say, well, you know, I disagree with this guy's conclusion or his hypothesis. That's fine. State your point and why you disagree and have a civilized debate about it. But to ignore the evidence, and especially in that film that I sent you with violence and cannibalism and throughout the Chaco world, boy, I got to tell you, after watching that, if you say, well, this guy's just full of shit, you got to really examine your point of view, because he points it out pretty clearly. And again, you could have a debate about it, and you can talk about how you think he's wrong. But to say that he has no evidence or he doesn't have standing, I just disagree with that. And boy, he presents a really good case.
Yeah, I love that video. I thought it was awesome. If you guys get a chance, definitely look up The Old New World. It's pretty
incredible. I got that written down too.
The Old New World, which I think I was just searching for stuff. You know, I used to just sit down at my desk and just search and, you know, just look at stuff. And I'm sure it just popped up. And it was like one of the most incredible things that just popped up out of the blue. It just like when Cosmos Mindlift, all his papers started to pop up. And then, you know, on my desktop, I've got all these I've got Joe B sent me the pot hunting in central Arizona. I mean, all the stuff people have given me, John and Maria and all this stuff I've got on my desktop. And it's just cool to go through and to look at this stuff and to realize that, you know, this history that we have, we're so blessed to be able to be in the Southwest and to have experienced this huge culture that's, and the thing is, it's completely, you know, no one knows about it. It's a big secret. And people want to keep it that way because they think that if you know it, then somebody will tear it up. And, you know, I disagree with that just as well. I do too.
I think it's important to keep it open. We've talked about that before. And man, I got to get one of those nice mic stands you got. This is a little bit.
That's a little more difficult. I'm a little easier. And I tell you, my new setup, hopefully it sounds good because it's been a nightmare for an entire week. I've lost an entire week this week trying to get, you know, and then I had buzzes in the cable and you know, just like with the headphones. I mean, I understand, but I can't do a whole show with headphones on. It's not going to work, but I'm going to do entire podcast
shows. Yeah, I'll probably end up getting one of those stands, putting it in my office. But you sound that sounds great. I like it. Yeah, it's compared to the previous one, you can notice a difference. It sounds really good.
Well, the new system also will help the old one if I use the old one sound better as well because it's made by the same company. Oh. So it'll definitely should help that too. But
is that Rode?
A lot of stuff coming out new. I got a lot of stuff coming this direction. We're going to do a lot of different projects. So I'm excited. I just had to get this thing put together and we'll have to get out and see some stuff for the rattlesnakes to get out and own Agua Fria, and they will. So
speaking of that, next week, let's talk about going up to Rattlesnake and maybe doing a collaboration video.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, man, I appreciate you coming on and I appreciate you spending your time. And I think we're going to lock this thing down and I appreciate everybody. You can hear a fly fart with that mic. Thanks, Kim. Well, and we'll get it tuned in too because it's not dialed in. That takes another week to get it dialed in. I got 50 knobs to be able to get it hopefully just right so it's not too loud or too irritating. But hopefully
it sounds great. It sounds great. I mean, I'm on a speaker system, so it's coming in really nice, Jeff. I like that.
So, you know, I appreciate everybody tonight and everybody that took care of business. And thank you very much. And man, I will see you later.
Yeah, I appreciate everyone having me on here. I know tonight's not my normal lively self. It's been a long day, but nonetheless, I'm appreciative. And any information that I can share with you guys, I'm grateful for that. So thank you for having me on, Jeff. And thank you to all your viewers. They're good people.
Hey, thank you again. I appreciate you. Hey, again, I want to thank everybody. We'll give him a nice round of applause. I think we can do that. That's not the one we're going to do that with, but one of these buttons over here. We'll figure it out. There we go. Jay Howard, we will get this taken care of, and we'll get this thing figured out. We will. I feel really good about it. I had a great time tonight, and it's just hopefully going to get better and better and better, and we'll get it all dialed in. It did take forever to figure out. I lost an entire week. I lost a video and a whole nine yards this week trying to get this thing up and running, and hopefully it'll be easier from here on out. And I appreciate everybody, and thanks again. And we will see you guys on Tuesday. And man, I appreciate all of you. We're going to get, let me move over here and get over to this area, and let's leave with a good nosebleed. Thank you again. You guys have a great evening, and I will see you later. Thanks again. I appreciate everybody, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Jay Schreck with Jeff. Lost Highway.